session number 12400, reel 2.
Right. The operations that we did off the coast were very, very quick, and we did get some definite hits, and one or two E-boats we considered were sunk or badly damaged. But these early coastal force actions, I suppose it was a bit like the RAF, the fighters, sort of having very quick actions. And sometimes, quite often, we didn't really know how much damage was done, but we did divert them, and many of them used to retire at full speed because we're loaded with mines. They didn't really want to hang around too much. They also used to come over with torpedoes, of course, to torpedo our convoys on the east coast. But we did have some effective results by going over to the other side and just cutting engines and just drifting and waiting to hear for the E-boats to come back. And we had a chance when they were almost approaching Ostend, or might be one of the other ports like Imoyden. They were relaxed, having been over raiding our convoys, and they knew that they should be back into their harbour in a matter of minutes. And it used to surprise them quite considerably when they realised that we were there and we were going to have a go at them.
Were your actions at this time mainly against E-boats?
Yes.
But you also attacked the escort trawlers?
Occasionally, there were escort trawlers. They were more heavily armed and were a little bit more difficult, because we had no torpedoes. Although we did back up the MTBs, very often we went out with MTBs. And we had an arrangement, if there was a convoy there, we caused a diversion, deliberately caused a diversion with the escort so that the MTBs could go in and attack with torpedoes. That was quite an effective cooperation, operating with the MTBs, with an MGB escort.
Did the MGB flotilla have a particular formation when they went into attack?
It varied. Very often it was in Order 1, which is a straight line. We went straight in. If the Germans were on a straight line, we just go right down the line, because they were going possibly on a reciprocal course. And that's why everything happened so quickly. But we had other sort of... Order 7 was a sort of a 7 shape disposition. It varied on the type of action that we were carrying out.
How frightening or exhilarating were the attacks at this time?
Well, in my experience, we had superficial damage, but we didn't have anyone wounded on the boat that I was in. Many of the other boats were not so lucky, but we were lucky. Apart from superficial damage to the boat on one or two occasions, which could be sort of quickly repaired, we were lucky. But there were a number of boats that were, of course, unlucky and had people killed and badly wounded.
Was it possible to see the results of your opening fire, or was it impossible?
Well, you could see your shots, because we had tracers, and you could see where they were going and when you were hitting.
And your job was to operate the Oerlikon?
Yes, at that time, yes.
Yeah. Was it a reliable gun to operate, or did you get stoppages?
Oh, we got stoppages from time to time. It was a very good gun at the time. But later, of course, they were developed, and you had twin Oerlikons, and then later on you had pom-poms, and then, of course, after that you had an automatic six-pounder, which was a very much more effective gun, but that is later on than this particular time. But Ronnie Carr was wounded, and he was replaced by John Dudley Dixon, who later distinguished himself and had the DSC. He called me in to his cabin not long after he had joined the boat and said he would like to recommend me for a commission. And so he put me forward, and I left GB60 at the end of September 1942. And in fact, on my 21st birthday, I went from Felixstowe down to Victory at Portsmouth to pass a medical. And then after some leave, I went down to King Alfred to go for my commission. King Alfred at that time consisted of going in three stages. The first stage was at a school called Modon in the back of Brighton. Then we did a time at Lancing, in Lancing College, and then ended up at Hove. I was in a division called Effingham, and my divisional officer was Lieutenant Commander Roger Hill, who was quite an interesting character. He always had a little dog with him, and he had quite a scruffy beard. I did distinguish myself by passing out top in the class in the Effingham division, possibly because I found I was quite good at navigation. I came top in the navigation. And that meant that when one was commissioned, one had the chance of saying what you would like to do. And when I went up to the board, I was asked what branch I would like to do, and I said straight away, well, I'd like to get back to Coastal Forces. So from King Alfred, there was a standard course for newly commissioned RMBR officers. You went up to the Naval College at Greenwich and did what was known as the knife and fork course. You were taught to behave like an officer. And at that time, there were raids on London, and we had one or two fire raids. Incendiary bombs used to come down. And when we were on fire duty, we had to cope. Whilst we were in a cipher class at the Naval College, one of the Wren officers was teaching us cipher. We heard a plane up in the sky, and we heard it dive. And we realised that it must, although we didn't have any warning, we realised it was a jerry plane. So we heard the swish of a bomb coming down. We all automatically, without an order, dived under the tables, and there was a terrific thump, and the Naval College was hit by this explosive bomb. Of course, a tremendous amount of dust came up, and when we sort of stood up again. The Wren officer very coolly said, "Well, gentlemen, I think that we'll stop this lesson at this point and go out and see what's going on." And we went out, and there was quite a lot of damage to this one block, the one where the commander's office was. But fortunately, only one officer was killed, who was ill in bed. But it caused quite a stir at the time, and I think that was the only explosive bomb that fell on the Naval College during the war. The rest of the time, there were all these incendiaries which we were able to deal with straight away. Well, then from the Naval College, I went down to Excellence, Whale Island, for the second time as an officer, and was victualled in the old Royal Yacht, the Victoria and Albert, which was quite an interesting experience. But we did a course for officers for coastal forces on the guns which were used on the MTBs and MGBs. Then we went on to HMS Vernon, and we were billeted in the girls' school at Rodine, where the famous notice in the dormitory was, "If you require a mistress in the night, please ring the bell." We used to ring the bell, but we never got a mistress coming along, unfortunately. Then we did some practical torpedo work in a garage at Brighton to learn how torpedoes worked and how how you fired them. We had a simulator where you went in into a sort of a room which had a platform, and it simulated a night attack by a torpedo on a convoy, which was quite effective, especially when the chief POs dropped thunder flashes round you as you were trying to carry out an attack, and sometimes a bucket of water used to be thrown on you. But then after that we went up to St Christopher at Fort William again as officers, and we were carried out exercises in the Scottish Locks near Fort William, and did dummy MTB attacks on target, and generally got practice there. And then I went before another board at the end of the course at St Christopher, and they sort of looked up my notes and said, "Well, you were at Felixstowe as a rating in coastal forces, so we can't send you as an officer to Felixstowe. We'll send you to Dover, HMS Wasp." So I was quite happy about that. And on the 18th of April 43, I went down to Dover and was interviewed down there. And Dover operated as an MTB and an MGB base, and indeed ML base as well. It was really a League of Nations down there. We had a Dutch MTB flotilla, Polish gunboat flotilla, a Norwegian mine-laying flotilla, and being only 21 miles from the enemy coast, it was quite exciting down there. And the gunboats used to operate either from Dover or from Ramsgate, which was known as HMS Fervent. As customary, I was sent as a spare officer initially to Ramsgate, and put on what are known as MASBs, motor anti-submarine boats. They were 63-foot boats with three Napier Lion engines in them, and they were used primarily as air-sea rescue launches. cooperating with the RAF. They had British powerboat launches, and the Navy had these MASBs. But sometimes, when they were short of gunboats, they used to put the MASBs on a operation, an anti-E boat patrol. But they were primarily used as air sea rescue boats operating in the Thames estuary and the Channel. I was with a boat, I can't remember the name, but it was Eric Customs was the CO. I also did a...
How did you like doing that kind of work as compared with what you've been doing on MGBs from the Felix stuff?
Well, it was just an experience, really. I realised that I would soon be put onto a gunboat. Indeed, after a relatively short spell on a MASB, I did a little time in one of the newer 71-foot-6 motor gunboats.
Which one was that?
It was 117. And I was in an action there. And I must confess that when one is in an action... We were attacking the escorts on a convoy over on the French side. It is much better to be in a job where you're concentrating on something. When you feel you're just a spare officer, you don't really know what you ought to be doing. But on that particular occasion, I was able to... help out with one of the guns which had been hit, so it was really my first experience of action as an officer on 117. But then I was appointed first lieutenant of MGB 42, which was in the third motor gunboat Flotilla, which had a senior officer named Roger King, who was actually a Frenchman, strangely enough. Now, the 42, MGB 42, was a 63-foot boat with two Rolls Merlin engines, and we were based sometimes at Ramsgate, sometimes at Dover, and we did anti-E boat patrols anywhere from the Sandetti Bank down to the Varn, which is mid channel, or sometimes we went in much closer depending on the time of year and the visibility, and waited outside Ostend for any boats to appear. But here again, we were still very lightly armed. These boats only had one twin 0.5 turret amidships, one Oerlikon, again some depth charges, and a few strip Lewises, and we carried a hydrophone, which was a device on a length of piping that you lowered into the water when you had cut your engines and were just drifting, and it had a powerful microphone, and it could pick up engine sounds or propeller sounds from engines at quite a distance, and it was quite effective. There was one occasion when we were lying off the French coast, and it was one of those rare occasions when in midsummer, when there was no wind at all, right in the middle of a high pressure area, and the sea was like glass, and we were lying off, I think it was Ostend here again, you could just hear the occasional lap of the water on the side of the boat. And we had our hydrophone out, and we had an operator who, I have to say, was probably just a little bit dim, but a very pleasant sort of character. And he was turning the handle round, round and round, so he was getting the directional direction of any sounds underwater. And suddenly he called out, "Hydrophone effect, right aft, sir." And so I quickly swung round with my binoculars and looked aft, and I made out the silhouette of one of the stokers that was having a pee over the transom, which caused some amusement at the time.
So he was as sensitive as that?
Very sensitive, yes. The other boats in the flotilla, we sometimes had there were three Polish gunboats operating in our flotilla. There were really two half flotillas, one British and one Polish. The Polish senior officer was a chap called Dick Schuster, and his number one was Roman Dula. And this is when we came across people that really hated the Germans. Not only did they hate the Germans, they hated the Russians as well. But Dick Schuster was an interesting character, a typical Polish military officer. When we were following up an interception and going in towards the enemy, he was so intent on hitting the Germans and killing as many as possible. And we had a standing arrangement that if we were fortunate enough to capture an E-boat, he insisted that we, the British, would pick up any survivors, because he said he would not have a live German on his boat. And
he insisted on
The British boats doing any rescue work.
Rather than him.
Yes. He said that he hated the Germans so much that he would never have a live German on board. And this feeling was came up again on an occasion. In broad daylight, a German plane was shot down quite near the South Goodwin light vessel. We were looking out from the breakwater at Dover and could see the wreckage in the water. And it happened that the Polish gunboat S1 was on passage from Ramsgate to Dover on this occasion, and was the nearest boat to the wrecked plane, German plane. And looking through our glasses or telescope, we could see the gunboat go up to the wreckage and stay there for a while, and then it came back towards Dover. And the first thing we said as they came alongside, "Any survivors?" "No." And of course we learned afterwards in sort of conversation that he made certain that the Germans from that plane were dead. But that is really what the feeling is of the Poles. The Dutch...
What do you think they had done to them?
Well, they just hated the Germans for invading Poland.
What do you think they had done to that crew?
Well, I think that if there was a survivor in the water, they would just shot him. Their hatred was so strong.
Did they have an attitude of incomprehensibility towards your attitude?
No, I think that they used to say, "Well, you've never been invaded. We've lost everything. The Germans invaded Poland. They've carried out atrocities. And my God, if they get hold of a German, they're going to sort of treat him rough. I'm sure that's it, it. As you said earlier on, revenge.
You were going to mention the Dutch.
The Dutch, on the other hand, are very much more like the British. I got on very well with the Dutch for Tira. I made a number of friends there. And there was one Netherlands gunboat. Willy de Luza was the name of the Dutch senior officer of the gunboat flotilla, and he had a marvellous number one named Billy Lambrechtsen, who had been in the Royal Netherlands Navy in submarines, and I've never come across such a good navigator. And on one occasion we followed him going down from Ramsgate to Dover in thick fog at about 30 knots, and he managed to signal that he was slowing down to, as he approached Dover, going right through the inside the Goodwins, and signalled us that he was going down to 10 knots and then to 5 knots. Still thick fog, we couldn't see anything, and suddenly we saw the entrance to Dover. We went right through, and don't forget, there was no radar at that time. It was on sheer navigation he was able to go in thick fog right through from Ramsgate to Dover and get right in. Incredible man as a navigator. The Dutch MTBs, their senior officer was Hans de Reeve, and he was later succeeded by Harry Jorissen. I can remember one incident when we were out in a very, very rough sea when the Dutch were ordered to attack a convoy off the Grenay, and we were escorting them. And it was getting to the stage when the wind was exceeding force 5. It was probably about force 6 to 7. And we were wondering how well we would manage to get along in this sea, or be effective. And my CO, Peter Raleigh, we were the senior officer's boat on that evening. We rendezvoused with Harry Orison, who was leading the MTBs on that occasion, and we came right up alongside and cut our engines momentarily and used a megaphone, and Peter Raleigh said, "What do you think of the weather, Harry?" And Harry replied with his megaphone in a calm voice, "I have seen it less rough," which I thought was very affected. In any case, after that, the people at Dover on the cliffs there, the Admiral commanding Dover, recalled us. There was one occasion when the two boats, my boat and another one, MGB 40, were out. We were told to go down to the Varn, and we didn't like it at all because there was quite a strong gale blowing up. But nevertheless, we did as instructed. The one difficulty we had with these Merlin engines was that they were ordinary aircraft engines converted for marine purposes. They had water cooling, but the water cooling was not effective unless the engines were running at a certain speed. And in very rough weather,